two big hotels. There was a glass house and that other one.
Yeah.
There was five big grocery stores.
Yeah.
There was about four saloons. We had a newspaper.
Yeah.
Picture show.
They had 13 saloons there.
Yeah.
But they cut them down later on.
Yeah. When I was a kid there, it was about five.
Yeah.
But we had a newspaper. We had a picture show.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't uncommon in the summertime to see at least three steamboats
in
Ruby at one time.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, that you found a truck full of boats in there, same like it.
Boats, I should say, yeah. They're all double stackers, quite a few double stackers, big boats.
Yeah.
The Sarah and the Susie and
Sarah
the Hannah Susie. And the Louise and the Julia B. And
the Valleon.
And the Seattle number, and number one, number two.
And they have that, what?
And,
Robert. The MC bought old captain.
The Lavelle Young and, I don't know, there was a good many. The Isom, that was the biggest boat that ever came up the Yukon River.
Which?
The Isom.
Yeah, the Isom, yeah.
It only made one trip.
Yeah.
And it pushed so many barges upstream that it backed up the Yukon River. And burned all the wood that there was on the river, and they quit running it. That's a fact. That was the biggest boat that ever came up. And she pushed more barges up the Yukon River than any boat ever pushed up the river. She made one trip. Yeah. That's all.
Well, they dug a, I bet she dug a channel for the rest of them.
Yeah, channel for the rest of them, yeah.
You know, there's a... early days, there's an old Scotsman named Captain McCrane. Cap Crane.
Yeah.
Not the Cap, I think, about it, but over and over. He was over Alfred.
Yeah.
His name was McLean, yeah.
McLean?
They called him Cap McLean, houses anyway. And they nicknamed him Sandbar McLean. Ever Sandbar, what have you ever? He had one of them old big boats. His wife made a fortune up in Dawson, and he pulled her in to buy this. His old Robert Lee, the MC got a hold of it afterwards. He went broke, the crew took it away from him, and the MC did it in. I say that went up for sale. The MC said it in, and but you know, he used to get across some bars. He used to get on a bar. He knew he couldn't make it, but he'd get crossway to the bar, and the MC'd ask him, pull him off, go downstream. He'd get stuck, and he'd turn across on the bar. And these chaps, they one time old George Green pulled him off and just showed him in, shoved him over, get in the bag and hooked. He hooked himself on a bunch of snags and then and he had to wait for the bag of others to come and pull him out of there. And George fought hard to pull him. That was his game. When he couldn't make him, but when he couldn't get up over that bar, he turned crossways and then have to pull it back. And then when they just MC boarded boat, he'd take right after it, and fell in the water, and they would dig a channel. He'd follow that boat up over the channel, over the bar. So, and they nicknamed him, these other captains, Sandbar McLean. He went by that name, I guess, till he died. I don't remember.
Did you know Archdeacon Stuck?
Yeah, Archdeacon
Stuck. Well, I can tell you a few sayings about Archdeacon Stuck.
Yeah.
He used to travel by dog team a lot in over
that.
The trails in Alaska. He was going up the Kantishna River, and the trail was real heavy.
Yeah.
No trail.
Uh-huh.
So he was having pretty tough going.
Uh-huh.
So pretty soon he saw another dog team coming towards him. So they met. And the Archdeacon asked this fellow, he said, how's the trail in the direction you've come from? And he reeled off a lot of cussed words. And then he asked the Archdeacon, how was the trail in the direction he was coming from? He says, the same way. That's all he had to say. Then one time he was pulled into Tanana. You remember there's a big high bank there at Tanana?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're driving a big string of dogs while your leader's up on top of the bank, your sled's still on the river, and your team is strung up the bank.
Right out in front.
Yeah, right out in front.
Oh, Fort Gibbon used to be there.
And he was on G-pole and skis, see, and he had a heavy load.
Yeah.
Well, his leader was up on the bank, and his sled was down on the river, and he was shaking the G-pole and saying, come on, boys, the dogs wouldn't move. So there's four or five men standing up on the bank. He kept wiggling the G-pole and saying, come on, fellas, come on, let's go. Dogs all stood. So one of the fellas said to him, he said, Archdeacon Stuck, he says, do you want me to bring that team up the bank for you? He said, all right. So the fellow went down, got a hold of the G-pole, and he strung out a lot of cuss words, and the dogs went right up the bank. And he says, well, there's something in that language after all. Yeah, the Archdeacon, yeah, he says there's something in that language after all, because the dog savvied it, see? Then another time he was stuck on a bar in the summertime with his boat. Mm-hmm. And there was another boat coming up the river, and they could see this boat over there, you know, with the man in it, and stuck. So they hollered over to him, they said, who is it? What's your name? He says, I'm stuck. They hollered over again, who is it? What's your name? I'm stuck. Well, I said, okay, we know you're stuck, damn you, stay stuck. He was saying his name, see? They didn't know it. Yeah. Believe me, he traveled over the country a lot, too. You know, those early priests and ministers, you know? They covered a lot of territory, you know, summer and winter, by boat and dog team in the winter. You know, to their different missions, you know. It was the only way they could travel. Yeah. Ruby was built way up on both sides of the hill, Joe. You remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, across Ruby Creek and right up on the hill.
Well, there ain't nothing else.
Yeah, way up on the hill, you know, way up where Taxton's used to live, way up there.
You know, they built all a lot of buildings for stores and everything, and they put and these saloons and all that, they built them out so they stick out over the...
Well, the whole front street was built on pilings.
Put it on piles.
The ass end of the building.
And you want to... There's a writer went down the Yukon, one of these magazine writers.
Looks like a garbage dump.
Mrs. Post was reading that in one of the magazines. Yeah. It says, Ruby's the only town that turned his back to the Yukon.
Yeah, to the Yukon.
He's back.
You see? Here's your street. Here's the Yukon River.
That's what it is.
They had buildings all down Front Street on this side, you see, facing the river. Then on the other side of the river, all the stores faced, you know, in, you see. So the ass end of the buildings was on, the front end was on the bank, the ass end was out on piling.
Yeah.
Well, it was a hell of a goddamn dirty town in the wintertime because they dump all their goddamn garbage, see, over the, you know, out over the back end of the building.
Yeah.
Jesus, here you'd come into Ruby and see nothing but the ass end of the town sticking out, see? Looks like you're coming into the town backwards. But they had a big fire there in Ruby and it burnt out that whole... The riverside, so that was all cleaned out, see?
Didn't leave nothing, did it?
No.
Right,
yeah, the whole damn street, yeah. That was Tom Devane's... Well, that was one fire, but they had two fires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was... Wasn't it... Devane burnt out,
right? Devane burnt out, yeah.
A lot of people think he set that fire. For the insurance.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. He was crooked enough, too, anyways.
Yeah. What a lot of people...
Tom Devane was one of the most crooked traders that ever lived on the Yukon River, bar none.
Yeah.
He stole from the Indians, he bootlegged, he did everything there was to make money, and he made money.
What he done with me and Arthur Root, we sold him 10 gallons of...
Why, he had Tootsie...
We sold him 10 gallons of white mule, and it was... It was 100 proof.
He had Cooksey and Ed Grider up there.
You know what he done? He done? By God, when I come to town, he drawed off about 5 or 6 or 2 or 3 gallons out of it and filled it up with water.
Yeah.
And he said, you only give me about 80 proof moves.
Yeah.
70 proof. Yeah. I said, we tested that off and we tested it before it left. It was good, strong 100, which we promised to make 100 proof blueprint.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to cut down. Yeah, I said, I cut nothing down. So, the way I got even with him, I got a hold of a ton of sugar. And I just when yeah. we set it up, I said, you're going to pay for that right now.
Yeah.
I said, Tom, you know goddamn well that you can. So he, yeah, well, he says, if you think, feel that way about it, I don't have no argument. Well, I said,
yeah.
Arthur Lou was pretty sore over that.
Yeah.
I said, I was talking to Arthur when he got out there, and he was pretty sore. Him and me prospecting that winter together. See?
Where was that, out by the 14 mile? Oh, on Solomon.
And I had a team that time, I used to come into Ruby with them and get some stuff mm-hmm. once in a while. And we'd take, I'd peddle that booze too, you know, at the but, same time. I'd get more out of that than anything.
Yeah. But, well, he had Ed Grider and, up there at Horner Hot Springs. They had a still running up there.
Well, do you remember yeah. the time that he got old, I think you was in the Ruby that time. He got old, Jack Woods is the marshal then.
Jack Woods.
I guess you were
yeah.
gone then.
We were gone then, yeah.
That was after your daddy
yeah.
went down to Texas or someplace.
Yeah.
And they left your daddy, Jack Woods come and took your daddy's place that time, remember?
Yeah.
That's about the only marshal was there
yeah.
in early days. Tom mm-hmm. Long was a marshal there.
My dad was the second United States Marshal in Ruby.
Yeah.
C.K. Snow was the first one. You remember C.K.
Yeah.
Snow?
Yeah,
C.K. Snow.
Well, he was just... Tom took the... He come
he took C.K. Snow. Yeah, he took Snow's place,
yeah,
see?
I know he did. Oh, Snow, he had a...
Yeah.
Him and Fred Clark had a saloon together there that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the first jail, and the first guy they arrested in Ruby, they put him in a tent.
Married Ruby Kelly.
The first jail and the first man they arrested in Ruby, they put him in a tent on the beach.
Yeah.
Had him in a tent.
Yeah.
With a guy outside gardening.
Sure.
Before they had a jail built.
Sure.
You know, when the camp was first struck, see? Sure. Yeah.
No, he never, he'd take him home and tell him to, he just tried to keep him, he didn't try to make no record for himself that way. No, did he?
No.
He'd take
he'd rather take him home.
He'd take him home, he'd tell him he didn't go home, he'd rest him. He'd I'll put you in jail if you don't get home or get away from here. Get out of my sight.
Most of them would go home.
And if he fell on the street tonight, God save. He listened to what he said.
Most of them would go home.
That's all he'd tell him, wouldn't it? He'd just tell him once. He said, you remember when I tell him you, I don't mean with you.
He got along
and there was no expense and he got along with everybody good.
We didn't put him in jail here when I first come in the country. We used to take him home. We didn't put him in jail in Fairbanks when he
was
first coming here. We used to send him home.
Yeah, send him home, sure.
You wouldn't think of putting him in jail.
Not for being drunk. Hell
he used
no.
to send him home.
Of course, there was no drunk driving in those days. They didn't have any automobiles to mix the gasoline with.
No. Only had one cop here in Fairbanks.
That was...
Old man Gibbs was the policeman here.
Later with Hubbard, wasn't it?
Yeah, Gibbs. Yeah, but Hubbard was quite a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Gibbs and that guy that had the motorcycle, you know. He rode a motorcycle, you know, and he bought his own police uniform.
I don't remember his name, but I remember his
feet. Yeah. Old man Gibbs was, he was the policeman here when I was... A boy going to school here, high school here. Yeah. Can't think of that guy's name.
He was a well-liked marshal, Tom Long.
Yeah.
He'd rather be friendly with you than be mean with you.
Well, you didn't happen to know old Captain Goddard and Burnett when they come in here, did you?
Old who?
Captain Goddard, A.J. Goddard.
And Burnett, Barnett.
Who?
Barnett.
I knew of Barnett, yeah.
But you didn't know Captain Goddard?
I was here when he went across, McNear took him across the trail. McNear was one of them fellows that sneaked him away from here when he went away with that, the bank. Ocean Alaska Bank.
Yeah.
He took $600 a month money along with him. But later on I think they paid off 10%. They kept paying it. They finally got it around and they wound up with 10%. I got back a little of it, but not much. But he got away with the poke anyway. But the property and everything that he had, mortgage on, I mean, through the bank and that stuff. That stuff was all held here. And if there's anything coming to anybody, they just hung to it and I think it wound up 10% on the dollar. I think that's what I got.
Do you remember the fall my brother drowned in 1927?
Yeah.
Well, I went down the fall of 1927 by boat, right at freeze-up time after my brother drowned, see? Right. Now, let's see, 1927. I was 19 years old.
I
stayed down there with my folks that winter, you know, on account of my brother drowning, see? Because it was just us two boys. And in Noeline was the only one flying from Fairbanks to Nome. He had that Hamilton all-metal plane at that time. And the fare was $350 from Nome to Fairbanks and $150 from Ruby to Fairbanks. And Noeline, I wanted to get back here and go to school, see, in February. You know, start the last half of school. I was late anyway, even for the last half. Well, he'd fly from here to Nome, and he'd have a full load of passengers coming back, $350 each, see, back to Fairbanks.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't have a seat for me for $150 passenger from Ruby to Fairbanks, see.
Yeah.
Well, that went on and on and on, until finally I told Noel, I said, I want to get back to Fairbanks, and I don't want to wait much longer. Well, he says, I'll promise you a seat the next trip if I've got a full load in Nome. He says, I'll keep a seat open for you. In other words, you know,
keep a space.
Keep a space. So lo and behold, here he comes back from Nome, and he always refuel in Ruby, see, they'd have to. Stop full load again. So I went home and I told Dad and Ma, I said, the hell was Noel Wing in his airplane. I'm going to start out for Fairbanks tomorrow morning. And I started out and I walked to Nenana in 9 days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was in February 1928. And I walked right on my feet, no snowshoes.
Yeah.
The trail was good, see?
Well, the brother, you know his brother? No, the brother?
Sig.
Huh?
Yeah, but Ralph...
He kidnapped me and once over in the...
Ralph flew before Sig here, you know.
He kidnapped you? Yeah. He told me, I went down, I looked at the planes. I seen them army planes that come in here that time, you know, up there on the bar.
Mm-hmm.
He was here that time.
Yeah.
And Ruby.
When the army planes came in,
Ford went to, 1920. World War I.
Yeah, when the army planes came up.
Went to Siberia.
Yeah, four of them or five of them.
I've seen him, but I went down.
I was there.
Noel Wynn's brother, he had stopped down there on the ice and the cotton on the river, you know, on the river. He stopped there with this plane to get old Twitch to take him down to pick up them. Or caribou, you know, on the deck. And I said, I'm going to buy a ride on one of them some of these days. I'd like to take a ride. And why? He says, I'll give you a free ride down and back if you want to go down to the Ditma and with the Twitch and help us load these reindeer. Yeah, he had to take a load to the flat, and then he'd come back and pick us up for the continent. He'd pick come back and take a load to McGrath, and then he'd pick me up. And take me, and it's early in the morning, he's thinking about making a three trip, but a storm come up around Crater Mountain, and he never, old Crick to me, stayed down there and ate nothing but reindeer meat for 3 days for him to come back, and he never did.
Yeah.
He didn't come back, and Crick said, well, he says, we're going to get sick eating this meat, it's great. And he says, what says we start out in the morning? We lived around there, he had an accident.
Mm-hmm.
We kept a big fire going, and that storm come up, the snow, and it warmed up there. It was nice and terrible for. And went up to Christmas, that road out, but there nobody living there that time. That was after the mail stopped.
Mm-hmm.
The mail team, and then they were cut out. They and, you know, they're carrying the mail still on the plane. And then we walked over, and then when I got to over, I had no chance to get to the continent when they walked. So I put in 3 days of snowshoes, walking on snowshoes, just to get that ride down there.
Yeah.
And I eat reindeer meat down there for three days and nights. Spring reindeer, we had nothing else to eat.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to be back there to just go to the dinner ride. It wasn't far over to it. But he couldn't get back. A big storm just seemed to, you know how there was snow, storms comes up in the wintertime sometimes. and it stormed right on. It was still storming when I got back to the company. He didn't, he stayed down in the Denver, I guess, three or four days.
You see, Noel Wayne is the oldest flyer of all the Waynes. I mean, knew how to fly before any of the other Waynes knew how to fly. Noel Wayne was the first Wayne to ever come into Alaska, and he was a flyer when he came to Alaska.
Well, Noel, he was one of them.
Yeah, but wait a minute, I'll tell you about the Wayne brothers.
Uh-huh.
Ralph Wayne was the second brother that came to Alaska. He also learned to fly here.
Oh.
And he got killed up here.
Well, that's one of them.
Yeah, Cutview. Yeah, Ralph.
Yeah.
Then the next one that learned to fly up here was Sid Wayne. Then the fourth brother that came up here was Fritz Wayne, and he never did fly up here. He worked as a mechanic. But Noel was the first pilot of the Wayne family. Yeah. And the second one was Ralph, and he got killed.
No, the one that got killed was Ralph. Well, you know, they owned these Rangers, and they was, had them all killed and piled up on the ice down there on this river, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And, they figured that we had the snowshoe, so he dropped the plane in the, down into the snow, and the snow was pretty deep.
Yeah.
And I went in, we had to pack it all down.
Yeah,
and,
make it feel for him, yeah.
With snowshoes,
mm-hmm.
so he could take off of these loads,
mm-hmm.
understand?
Yeah.
And we loaded the meat and packed it down, so
mm-hmm.
he could take off.
Yeah.
He went to dinner, and he never did come back.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't help that, no.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't take no chances of going with him. And I never looked for more free rides on a plane.
You flew into town here.
Huh?
You flew into Fairbanks.
Who flew into Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Bob Sanders.
Yeah, you flew in.
He's a new farmer.
How much do you think it was from Nome to Fairbanks one time, the most, the highest?
Probably about $400 or $500.
$600.
$600.
That's what they got, the first pilots flying from Nome to Fairbanks. $600 a passenger.
They were still getting around $200.
That Bennett was the person. When he came in?
He wasn't one of the first, no.
He came in about the time they did.
Yeah, but he was, you know, flying about that time, but he wasn't one of the very first, though.
He had an open cockpit.
So all the pilots sat out in the open.
He was a daredevil, too.
Yeah.
This minute. He, at the time the Beaver Stampede, he did a lot of business.
And Crossan, Joe Crossan, too.
Huh?
Joe Crossan was one of the early ones, too.
Yeah.
Joe Crossan and Noel Wayne.
Wasn't there Christensen that flew here then, too?
Not around here.
He flew from Anchorage?
No, he might have flown in Anchorage or down on the coast or someplace, but not right out of this area here. Noel Wayne flew out of here, and Bennett flew out of here, and Crossan flew out of here. And they were one of the very first. And, it was that guy who used to get drunk all the time.
They used to. Bennett charged $200 from the
Bennett
public here to Fairbanks.
He was a heavy drinker, too, but that this other pilot,
You mean Bennett?
Yeah, Bennett was a heavy drinker. He drank lots of whiskey.
Yeah.
He was drunk all the time.
Yeah. He was in the Army. He was in the Army, you know, before he flew in the Army, I guess.
I can't think of that guy's name.
Come here.
No, he flew into Ruby there a lot, this guy I'm trying to think
of. He went out to Idaho and he got a contract there to carry the mail in Idaho someplace. He had a contract with a plane that last I heard of him. He was back in Idaho and carrying the mail in there, Crickstown or someplace. He had a mail contract there.
Vince Myro, he was a fairly early pilot, too. He flew out of Nome a lot, you know.
I don't know, maybe, who got his plane when old Bennett left? Did he sell it to Wayne?
No, I don't know.
I guess they'd give him something to get rid of him.
Yeah, they were. They wrecked a lot of planes, too, you know.
What?
They wrecked a lot of planes, too, Joe, you know.
You mean the.
The pilots, the flyers, sure.
Wayne, yeah.
Yeah. Lord, they never had any fields, and they land any place. Sure, one pilot landed right over there on the beach on the other side of the river there.
Yeah.
Right on the Yukon River beach.
Yeah. Well, you remember them Army planes, they landed on the
up
beach.
On the sandbar. They landed on the bar.
Right on the bar.
Yeah, on the bar, yeah.
The whole four.
Yeah, I read an article about those pilots.
He was
I was a kid. Yeah.
You
see, oh, yeah, sure. Out,
huh? For the clay, all the kids in the town.
Yeah, they went up there by boat.
He took a big boat with a, a barge up there. They were kind of funny fellows too. These natives along the Yukon, you get up on their cabin when they see them coming, and they claim they dip down like they're going to come right down, and the Indians roll off the cabin. They were telling a story about that. They just make them believe they're going to get them, you know, and they roll off. They wouldn't try to get off, they'd roll off over the cabin. You hear them talk about that?
Yeah.
They had a lot of fun out there. They'd come to these little villages and, you know, find down the Yukon from here, I guess, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. I can remember when they first started carrying the nail down the Yukon, you know, But I'll tell you, the old dog team nail used to come in more regular and more on time than it came in by airplane.
Yeah.
Because irregardless of the weather, the dog team would come in. They'd come in, yeah. See, the load limit on the Yukon River was 600 pounds. The post office authorities could force them to take 600 pounds. That was the load limit. I mean 800 pounds. 800 pounds on the river. Cross country where the load limit was 600 pounds. You know, like...
Scotty Clark.
Yeah, Scotty Clark and those guys. And,
Segwing and Scotty Clark.
They made money, too, the mail carriers hauling freight, you know. Besides the 600 and 800 pounds. Oh, yeah. Sure, they'd have two sleds. One with the mail and one with freight. And they'd come in with 19, 21 dogs. I'd even seen them come in with three men snowshoeing ahead of them. Three men, you know, beating the trail down for them. But they'd come in. Yeah. Geez, I'll tell you, when the mail had come in, well, that was...
Segwig, he picked up Mike Kulak at the poor man, the true shoe, the over for him, you know. And Mike said all he took along was cigarettes and coffee.
Yeah.
He lived on cigarettes and coffee.
Cigarettes and coffee.
He said, I'll never go to that guy. That's all he had was cigarettes and coffee.
I guess Mike's still over there crippled, huh?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Why, I don't know. I'd like to see Alaska like the old days again.
Well, you think that the price of gold raising to $70 would do us any good?
What?
Do you think the price of gold going up to $70 would do us any good?
Yeah, it would, because they'd be able to work more of this low-grade ground.
It don't work now.
But they can't work at 35.
Remember that 30 years ago, when they raised the price of gold to $35 an ounce, the cost of mining has went up 8 times.
Yeah.
And the gold hasn't went up at all.
Yeah.
So raising it to $70, which would be double, would that take care of that difference in cost?
Well, some of them have still made money at the 8 times raise at $35 an ounce. It depends on the richness of the ground.
They make good in flocks.
But
it's
all rich ground.
Good ground, yeah. But if it'd go up to $70 an ounce, they'd be able to work a lot of the lower grade jobs.
George told me after they'd taken the wages out of the cleanup, he run too close a margin to the that foreman gone. It cost too much to get it.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get it. And that's the reason they quit 2 years ago over there. But George told me this fall, if they ever raise the price of gold, we're going back here to work.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how they...
Actually, the price of gold should raise to about $240 to cover the difference in cost. Today, it should go up that much. Mathematically, that was what you'd have to take out, get for your gold, to do what you used to do. See? And you didn't have income tax and state tax and everything else tramping on you as you do now. You didn't have bookkeeping.
Well, the olden days, like in Ruby, you could buy a cream for around four and a half. Chase,
yeah.
4.5 Chase about as much as the yellow face.
Yeah, you can't buy it now.
Bills, that was there, I've seen a place. There's more bills at old, Jesse had where he's got, he bought cream for $4 at Chase in the NC Ruby. Tom Malone or somebody.
Yeah, well, I remember here in Fairbanks, too. You could go downtown and get a milkshake for 25 cents. Now it's 55.
Yeah, that's only a little over double.
In the 20s.
The cans are bigger than they are now.
Yeah, but
they cut the cans down, too, didn't they? The cans used to be bigger than they are now. The can, that can milk.
You didn't
they cut it down on account of shipping it in partial post.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason. They got to shipping it in the country from outside in partial post. You know, say like you or me or something. Lots of fellas used to do it, didn't they?
Yes, shipping it
in. There's no lady got her all her grub over in Ophir. Parcel post. She'd get it cheaper there than she could buy it over there from the store. Parcel post.
Well, the parcel post 14 cents a pound, isn't it?
I don't know.
They can go up to 40 some, I think it's 48 pound, ain't it? It's got to be under 50 pound. That's the reason they cut the milk down. That's so they can ship it.
Well, is there anybody, any of the Indians, anybody trapping over in your country?
No, not much, no.
The fur market isn't here anymore.
No.
There's a different
car. There's money.
They're trapping off up the Novi and all in there, but nobody comes over.
Yeah, but most of them aren't trapping, Joe. They're not trapping like they did 15 years ago. Hell, they don't. You know what the Indians are doing now? They're living off of welfare checks and unemployment checks.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Either one or the other.
And white man's
they don't do a goddamn thing.
They're smarter than the white man.
Sure.
That's the truth. Down there in Ruby, don't
welfare know. Checks and unemployment checks. If they work in the summer, they get unemployment checks. If they don't work all year, they're getting welfare checks. They're living off the taxpayers' money is what they're doing now.
You want Charlie Ross is living with? What's her name? Belina.
Belina.
They went down to get married, Charlie and her went down to get married, and Steve, that he's commissioner, I guess he attended that part of it.
Gets a welfare check.
Huh?
She, Belina, gets a welfare check.
Yeah, she can get it for the...
Yeah, for the kids.
For the one kid.
Yeah.
And when they got next to these kids belonging to Charlie, they cut that out on her just lately.
Yeah.
I hear that down in Ruby now. She can only get the one for the, that little...
Yeah, for her. Yeah, for that kid.
What's his name? Belonged to Murphy.
Yeah.
Well, she gets it for that.
Mm-hmm.
She can't get nothing from the other.
Yeah.
And she's got three for Charlie.
Yeah, well, Charlie Ross is no good anyway.
Yeah, they're a whole bunch. You got to live off of that one kid. And they cut it when they found out these kids, they weren't living. And there's his kid, and he's been living with her. I don't know, there must have been a kick went in something about her or something, I don't know. But I hear the movie now that she can only draw the one.
Yeah.
Charlie's out trapping this winter, too.
Yeah.
Up the Novi, yeah. It made him go to work anyway.
What did he go up, by boat?
I don't know why he went up. He's up there, that's what they told me. Movie.
Up the Novi, like, huh?
He went up the Novi, yeah.
Is Belina with him?
Someplace.
Belina with him?
Huh?
Belina with him?
Oh, she's in the Novi. She's going to stay there and draw that check, is it?
Well, that part of it we don't take, do we?
No. You know that stuff about Tom Devane, I wouldn't want that to be on the tape, huh?
I understand that. That's the reason I don't let nobody have these tapes till I know how they're going to use them. Because names and places can't be used on them.
I don't know, but I mean, you know, what I said is true, you know, but I wouldn't want it on the
tape. Is the fact that it must not be libeled.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? As far as the tape...
You know, I know, but other pioneers that listened to what I said about him, well, they wonder why I shouldn't say that. See, I didn't think that was on when I was talking about him.
Well, it's strictly understood that these tapes have to be added to protect the people that give them as well as the people that use them.
No.
You see, there's no such thing as transmitting words that are injurious to anybody. This is just the same as that FCC law, communication law. There's laws on this, too, but these people didn't know it. They didn't know that I had been through a lot of that. You can take tape recordings, but if there's libelous statements on there, you're destined to use them. You see? And that's the reason I want to force the university to sign the contract that they're liable for the misuse of any of these tapes. Not us that took them, or not us that made them. You understand? There's more to it. Forrest Baker didn't quite understand that when we talked one night there, him and Professor Kime and all of them. And I backed him up because... you've given me this tape in good faith. Uh-huh. And for me to give that or allow that to be used by any misuse would be libelous. And that I don't want to happen.
No.
You see?
Yeah.
So until we pin them down legally so that they cannot misuse them. And liable to igloo or the person giving the tape.
Well, what we said about Tom's saying is true, but I mean,
the only way a tape that it would be.
I say what we said about Tom's saying was true.
You see, when they
believe that anyway, don't
you? You see, what I'm telling you is going on the tape too. When they transcribe these tapes, if there's anything that could be libelous or reflect on relatives of any of the people giving the tapes, they must eliminate the names. They cannot use them.
Yeah.
You see? But you see, these green people that don't know, they misuse things and it's too late to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to set up the rules to prevent that from happening beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Now this tape was an interview of Joe Ferris visiting with Tom Long in his home at Fairbanks, Alaska. Both Tom and Joe are members of Igloo 4, and this is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4. And this is the property of Igloo 4 and not to be misused in any manner. See? And the only thing is, before I let go of any tapes, I've got to have an ironclad.
Yeah.
You see? And of course, many of the members don't understand those things.